Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back. I'm in pathetic shape. My eye hurts so bad today that it's very, very distracting, and I'm depending on my guest today to carry the ball, and he'll have no problem doing that. So, rhabdo has become an almost like goal for some people. In the CrossFit community, there's T-shirts and hoodies that say, I got rhabdo, like I've been to Disney World, or, you know. And really, instead of being like, I've been to Disney World, they're more similar with, hey, I gave myself cancer. Because rhabdo is not a goal. It's not something you want to happen to you. And in April of this year, IFBB pro Dana Lynn Bailey found herself in the hospital as a result of rhabdo. And the internet went crazy. The searches for rhabdo literally went up 10,000% on that day and the 3 days following it. And that tells me nobody knows what rhabdo is, which is really scary because more and more people are finding themselves in this situation. My guest today is Joe Cannon. How you doing, Joe? Let me open your mic up.
How you doing, Carl?
I'm moving a little slow today. And the reason I have Joe on the show is because the truth of the matter is that Joe probably knows more about rhabdo than any clinician out there, because Joe started talking about it over 10 years ago and actually wrote the first book on rhabdo. And let me give you its name, because if you want to know more about it, it's called Rhabdo, the Scary Side Effect of Exercise You've Never Heard Of. But thanks to Dana Lynn Bailey, a lot more people have heard of it. So let's start 10 years ago. How did rhabdo find itself in your front position there?
It's a great question. So take a step back. My master's degree is in exercise science, and my undergraduate degree is in chemistry and biology. And I've always been a research nerd. And one day, about a decade or so ago, I find myself reading a magazine article about something I've never heard of before, rhabdomyolysis. And I was quite literally shocked, because I said, you know, I've got a whole bunch of science books in my library. I've taken a boatload of science classes. I have never encountered this phenomenon before. And I went and I looked at my library. I looked and pulled out all my biochem books, my cell biology books, my exercise phys books, my certification books. I'm certified by NSCA as well. And it's not anywhere. And then I became a dog with a bone. And so that became, you know, my quest over the next 10 years to tell as many fitness trainers as possible about this phenomenon. Because one of the things I do is I train personal trainers for one of the organizations. So and it's been my experience that the majority of the fitness trainers, not just in America, but the whole planet, have never heard of rhabdomyolysis before. It's not being taught to them. And so I made it one of my missions in life is to try to tell as many people as possible.
Uh-oh. We lost the connection. Hopefully Joe will come right back. Here we go. Hold on, Joe. Hold on. For some reason, you dropped out. So you made it your mission in life to tell as many people as possible
about this phenomenon.
And I find this interesting that personal trainers don't know what it is, because they are the ones in a position most likely to put people into rhabdo.
Unfortunately, I have received a lot of emails over the years from people who have developed rhabdo working one-on-one with personal trainers. And unfortunately, I get more emails these days than I did when I first started talking about it, which tells me that the incidence of rhabdo may be on the increase. I can't give you statistics on this because nobody, unfortunately, is tracking rhabdo in the general population. But I can tell from the emails I'm getting, I think it's happening more. And again, I felt bad for Dana for getting rhabdo. I was tagged on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. She was 10, 15 times by different people saying, look, you know, this person got it. And, you know, so she is unfortunately she got rhabdo, but she really heightened the awareness of this phenomenon, which I'm sorry she got it, but I'm glad she came out and talked about it, because I need all the help I can get telling people about this phenomenon.
On another note, Why is it noble? And this is even me, Joe. Yeah. I mean, I'm just a kid from Brooklyn at the end of the day, even me, like when I tore my hamstring, literally, I had a 3-connection avulsion on my left hamstring. There was almost a proudness in it. Like, I hurt myself training. I'm so serious about this that I literally am going into some deep, dark places that you people won't go because you're pussies. Right.
That is the mentality of many in the fitness world today. It's, unfortunately, no pain, no gain seems to be making a comeback, even though we all know that's a myth. But I see it a lot. Unfortunately, every day I go on to Instagram, I see hashtag rhabdo. And many individuals don't have rhabdo. They're just taking pictures or videos of themselves working out, and they're tagging it with hashtag rhabdo. And I'm looking at this, shaking my head, saying, if you only knew how bad this phenomenon was, you wouldn't be doing that. And sometimes I even reach out to them. I'm like, what are you doing? And again, sometimes you get snide remarks back, and then, you know, they're like, oh, we're just being funny. There's nothing funny about rhabdo. It's like you said, it's like, oh, I got cancer.
Well, exactly. It's like if you knew that there was a chemical that causes cancer upon contact, and there are a lot of them. Sure. And then you had a beaker of it in your hand, and you're about to pour it on yourself, and you're going hashtag cancer, you know, hashtag F cancer, hashtag I'm not afraid of cancer, hashtag give me cancer. People would think you're an idiot, but yet there's some sort of nobility in the idea of pushing yourself so hard that that you could actually develop a life-threatening situation. And I want to point that out for a second. So let's talk about rhabdo, the acute phenomenon of rhabdo, right? Somebody goes into the gym, and there is no absolute where we could say this will get do these things, it'll give you rhabdo, because there's people out there who were gardening and got rhabdo. So we're going to talk about that in a second. But wait. The reality is that rhabdo can kill you spontaneously.
Unfortunately, yes, there have been instances of people who have died during from rhabdo complications, some of them being college football players who have died. There have been people in the military who have died. There was, unfortunately, a police officer last year in Ohio who died from a heart attack resulting from rhabdo. It does happen. There was another police officer, a cadet, who passed away earlier this year from symptoms arising from this phenomenon. So, yeah, unfortunately, this does happen. And I think a lot of people don't take rhabdo seriously enough. I mentioned heart attack a second ago. People are under the – many individuals are under the impression that rhabdo is only a medical condition that affects the kidneys. And that's not true. That seems to be the condition that everybody have heard about. Oh, rhabdo kidney failure. Rhabdo affects your liver, for goodness sake. And not only that, but your heart function can be altered. Again, people have had
your
heart
attacks. Your brain, Dr. Tuliatos, I am going to put all your questions up throughout the interview, so please be patient. I see you posting things, and I'm going to get to those. You can have a stroke when you have rhabdo. You could have severe ischemic brain damage from rhabdo, because you know people who have rhabdo, they all talk about that they couldn't say their own name, they didn't know where they were. Like rhabdo is like pouring metabolic debris in your bloodstream, and it hits every organ and every system because it's traveling around getting gunked up everywhere.
That's a very good analogy, and that's exactly what's going on. The stuff inside your muscle fibers leaks in your bloodstream, and some of this can cause catastrophic problems downstream. So you're absolutely correct.
Now, as a result of your early adoption of this cause, you probably receive more emails and messages and requests for help about rhabdo than any clinician, any universities, any hospitals, because you literally get hundreds a day from all over the world, right?
I have gotten emails from people literally in the hospital. They found me just Googling, you know, rhabdo or whatever, and they found me somehow, and they pulled me up on their iPad or whatever. And unfortunately, some of them in the hospital have actually told me that the medical professionals in the hospital did not believe they had rhabdo, which I find amazing. I think that's getting better now because the medical profession is actually talking about rhabdo and exercise-induced rhabdo specifically. Some are under the impression that you have to be a Navy SEAL or a Marine or a Ranger to therapy to get this condition. Again, we've met people, we've talked about people who've gotten it from lower intense exercises as well. But some in the medical profession may be under the impression you have to go out and do really intense stuff to get rhabdo. And that's actually not so. But you're right, I do get a lot of emails. These days, a lot of them are coming from Instagram because I'm quite vocal and I like Instagram. So I post a lot on rhabdo there. And so I get a lot of messages there, as well as some on Twitter and a little bit on Facebook. Mostly these days is a direct email through my website or on Instagram itself.
Now, I want to tell a story that you intimated to me. We're not mentioning any names, but some kid messaged you like in the middle of the night. He went down in his basement at midnight and decided to train until 6 a.m. in the morning, and he messaged you and he was like literally thought he was dying. He didn't want to call the ambulance. Now, obviously, you probably didn't get that message in real time, but this is a bigger phenomenon and problem than many of us realize.
I agree. I do get those emails. Many of them are in the middle of the night when most of us are in bed. And then I usually, you know, check my email around 8 o'clock in the morning or so. And that's when I'll see, you know, it's 2 a.m. I'm embarrassed to call 911. Everybody's asleep. What do I do? I'm online. I'm trying to find out why my muscles are in pain, why my urine looks dark colored, and they're freaking out. And then they find me and email me, and, you know, all I can do is write back, you know, hours later, are you okay? And, you know, and sometimes I hear back from them, and sometimes I don't hear back from them, unfortunately. So
now,
I know.
Now, there is really no way to say these are the things that cause rhabdo, and because there's really no interest in doing any kind of meaningful research into this phenomenon, is there?
Really, no. There's unfortunately, the CDC is not tracking it in the general population. The only people who appear to be tracking it is the U.S. military. They have been working to reduce the incidence of rhabdo over the last several years. Their research finds that the Marines have the highest level, followed by, I believe, it's Army, Navy, and Air Force. And they have been trying to reduce it. And the Navy in particular, I just saw an article today. I was passed on by a friend of mine who also investigates rhabdo that Navy is trying to deal more with some with cadets who are exercising intensely. There have been, unfortunately, some deaths of cadets in the Navy. So, I'm pleased that the military is dealing with this. I wish the fitness industry as a whole would take up this mantle. And as a rule, they're really not, for whatever reason. I sometimes joke that rhabdo is almost like Fight Club. You know, in Fight Club, you know, in the movie, you got one rule. One rule of Fight Club, you don't talk about Fight Club. When it comes to rhabdo, you don't talk about rhabdo. And so, they're really not addressing it as much as I would hope, although it is getting better. Some individuals are actually talking about it now. So I'm glad to have all the help I can get. Because I said, for over 10 years, it's basically just been me and maybe a couple other people who have been talking about this condition.
But
it is something that I think is occurring more in the population than before. And I also think this may be a woman's issue that nobody is talking about. Most of the people who reach out to me these days are women. It's not men. And then, so what is the reason why more women are getting it maybe than men?
I'm going to go on a limb here and say that more women are training today.
They are. They are.
I may have a little delay in my microphone. During the commercial break, I'm going to disconnect and reconnect because my camera just did something weird. But more women are training today, right?
Okay. They are, and there's no doubt about it. More women are training, and they're lifting weights, which is wonderful. But I think more women are likely to reach out for help than maybe men are. Perhaps that may be another reason why I'm seeing it more of women. It just could be their men may suffer in silence and bite the bullet, and more women are like, "Hey, what the heck's going on here?" So that's an issue as well. So, but yeah, women seem to be the people who reach out to me these days the most.
So, since there is really no meaningful research out there that we can point to that will give us a roadmap for how to avoid rhabdo, I'm going to make a series of assumptions and suppositions to you. And throughout the show today, because I would really like to come away from the show with maybe just a little more of a bullseye of where we can stay to try to be rhabdo-free.
Great.
Okay.
Great. I think it's a great idea. There is no, if I take one more step, I got rhabdo. If I step back, I don't have rhabdo. Unfortunately, there isn't that line of demarcation, which I wish there was, but there really isn't. It's different for different people. Some people can go out and be a ranger or a SEAL or whatever, and they'll never get it. And then other people can walk into some gym and work out on the very first day and get it, which is very odd. When it comes to rhabdo and do you have it, do you not, a lot of the people on the internet, when I go and I look at what the other people say, everybody seems to put the emphasis on one key phenomenon, and that is the dark colored urine symptom. And they'll say, well, if your urine is dark colored, you got rhabdo. And well, I'd say, yeah, you probably do. I'd also give them a little pushback and say, well, a significant amount of people don't have that symptom. So you can have rhabdo and not have dark-colored urine. So my litmus test is if you come to me and you think you have rhabdo, I'll ask you a couple of questions. Number one, I'll ask you, did you recently, like today or yesterday, do an exercise or activity that you have never done before or not done in a long time? And if the answer is yes, I'll then ask you, are you in pain now when you're not moving? And here's the reason I say this. Delayed muscle soreness, which everybody has experienced when you work out too much, delayed muscle soreness doesn't hurt until you move. You move, you push on the muscle, that's when you feel pain. That doesn't hurt until you move. Rhabdo hurts when you're not moving. And it hurts like the dickens. People have told me rhabdo pain is worse than giving birth. So people have told me they wanted to kill themselves. The pain was so bad. And so it is a really horrific pain, but it hurts when you're not moving. And it progresses as the hours tick by. Rhabdo pain can occur very quickly after you stop exercising. Some people have told me minutes after stopping exercising, they start to feel pain. And as the hours tick by, the pain gets worse and worse and worse. So that's also a little different than delayed muscle soreness, which usually kicks in somewhere between 24 and 48 or so hours after the activity. So a quick acting pain, the pain happens when you're not moving. That's going to be two questions that I would ask you if I suspect you have rhabdo. Now, that's not always foolproof either, because I've met people who don't have the classic rhabdo symptoms. So again, makes it even harder to figure it out. That's why when I discuss this, I usually say, you know, we don't go on Dr. Google looking for answers. We don't even ask Joe with what he thinks is the answer. That the best thing to do is go to the hospital and they'll figure it out in about 10, 15 minutes with a blood test, urine test, stuff like that.
So one of the things that you and I talked about offline was I asked you, I said, is there any research out there on hard training athletes, maybe bodybuilders and powerlifters or CrossFitters mm-hmm. who are completely asymptomatic? So right. they're not peeing dark. They don't really have acute muscle pain. They just have DOMS. And mm-hmm. and have we looked at their creatine kinase and creatinine levels and said, wow, this guy's at 15,000 and he doesn't have rhabdo. Do we know yeah. that those high numbers in CPK are actually indicators of rhabdo?
So generally, creatine kinase is an enzyme that goes up with muscle damage. And as a rule, it's a hard and fast rule, not perfect. Some doctors will make the call you got rhabdo if your creatine kinase level is anywhere from 5 to 7 to 10 times higher than normal.
And what's the high end of normal, just so we can establish?
So normal levels of creatine kinase are going to be about 1, 200 or so.
But this is in the general population that doesn't move.
Yeah, general population, when you're exercising, but if you're exercising intensely, you're doing like, you know, boot camp, stuff like that, your creatine kinase level may go 500, 600, 700, maybe 1,000. And again, for some individuals, they may be asymptomatic. Other individuals, they'll get the call of a rhabdo when they may be at 12,000. I've encountered people in the past, they've been at 80,000, 100,000, 120,000 creatine kinase level. The issue with creatine kinase levels is if you don't go to the hospital fast enough, that test may not be accurate, because creatine kinase starts to go back down after a day or two. And so I've met people who said, I went to the hospital 2 days later, my creatine kinase was normal. Well, I kind of expect that since you waited too long. So that's, you know, but that's why I think it's of paramount importance for people to go to the hospital as quickly as they possibly can. And again, so doctors will measure the creatine kinase level. They'll also measure the amount of myoglobin in the urine. Right. Myoglobin is, as I sometimes call in class, muscle hemoglobin. It's hemoglobin in the muscle, and it's toxic to your kidneys in high concentrations. And this is the reason why your kidneys sometimes stop working when you have rhabdo. Some individuals may have to go on dialysis to help save their kidneys. One thing I like to talk about when I discuss, you know, myoglobin is, you know, your urine doesn't always have to change color, you know, but they will be able to detect for that in a urine test, even if your urine didn't change color. But, you know, for the people who do take rhabdo as a badge of honor, sometimes I'll throw out this statistic that they're probably not aware of, and that's if your urine has changed color, if your urine's looking like Coca-Cola, iced tea, or anything like that, you've lost at least 3.5 ounces of muscle. It takes at least 100 grams or 3.5 ounces of protein breakdown to change the color of your urine.
Wow, that's a significant amount of muscle loss.
It's a good amount. It really is.
I mean, especially if you're a bodybuilder and you're trying to make gains and you're like, I train harder and harder and I'm getting smaller and smaller. It could be this.
It's a possibility. It could be that. It could be overtraining syndrome for another topic for another discussion. But you're right, and I think I like talking about that because it's really, really people are
because they don't care. They don't care about damaging their kidneys, but if they're losing muscle, like, oh wait a minute, I got to stop doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of stupid.
I think that is really, really a good thing for them to keep in the back of your mind. Dr.
George Tulliato says, "Does arachidonic acid?" I'm assuming that's his acronym here. Does arachidonic acid promote rhabdomyolysis through muscle inflammation? Any thoughts on that?
So arachidonic acid is involved in synthesis of prostaglandins like thromboxane and prostacyclin. It plays a role in our blood clotting and all that stuff, as well as many other things. Prostaglandins are like hormone-like substances. I've not seen any definitive data on arachidonic acid and development of rhabdo. So I couldn't speak to that either way. I'd have to jump on, you know, Medline or something like that and start looking at the evidence. It's possible. Rhabdo, you know, even though we're talking creatine kinase, myoglobin, stuff like that, rhabdo is much more complicated than just a couple of things. So I would not doubt that there would be elevations in arachidonic acid. And there is inflammation. There's generation of free radicals that play a role in this as well. So I wouldn't totally discount it. I just haven't seen the evidence. It's possible, though.
He also says cocaine leads to rhabdo. Now, I don't know that that's true. Have you heard that?
Yeah, so
I know cocaine leads to wallet dough, which is the breakdown of the money in your wallet. I know that.
Yeah, it definitely does that. Today we're talking about exercise-induced rhabdo. Turns out there's three broad categories of rhabdo. There's traumatic rhabdo. If you fell off a ladder, you were in a car crash, for instance, you were bedridden in a nursing home, you can get rhabdo from that as well. So there's traumatic, there's non-traumatic rhabdo, which would be drug-induced, cocaine overdose, other medications are, you know, for instance, a lot of people watching this have probably seen the TV commercials for cholesterol-lowering drugs. And if you watch the cholesterol-lowering drug commercials really, really carefully, you'll hear them say the general warning, if you experience any pain or weakness, see your doctor. This could be a sign of a rare but serious disorder. That's rhabdo.
Right.
So there is a drug-induced rhabdo. So, I have seen reports of overdoses from drugs being attributed from rhabdo accompanying drug overdoses. So, yes.
Okay, so let's stay with that just for a minute longer. So we also know that things like NSAIDs and very powerful – anti-inflammatory drugs, when used and in concert with training, can actually promote the occurrence of rhabdo. And the entire country, and possibly the world, is in love with things like turmeric and curcumin and ginger because these are powerful anti-inflammatory cyclooxygenase inhibitors. And taken in large enough doses, Joe, I found out they can work as well as things like diclofenac. So and people are pounding this stuff down, fish oil and turmeric three times a day. I wonder if that could lead to promoting rhabdo.
So I've not seen any data on the supplements, those particular supplements being associated with rhabdo. Usually if when I hear supplements and rhabdo, I usually associate with stimulants. But turmeric fish oil, I haven't seen it. Supplements are the other thing that I tend to pay a lot of attention to out there, and I haven't seen anything on turmeric. But you know, you said a lot in the last sentence, and you were talking about the NSAIDs and rhabdo, and I would say yeah. So getting back to the doctor's question on arachidonic acid is involved in the production of these things called prostaglandins. Prostaglandins do an awful lot of things in the body. They can help our blood clot and not clot. They're involved in the pain sensation. They're also involved in muscle repair. And so, you know, for athletes involved in intense training, you know, I would say, you know, if you're going to be taking a lot of these, you know, aspirin, Advil, naproxen, et cetera, realize that they do inhibit prostaglandin synthesis. And could this inhibit your muscle repair, your muscle recovery? There is some talk that this may happen. Okay, so that's one thing to think about. The other thing to think about is, as you touched on, is that these NSAIDs, these non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, will reduce kidney function. This is an issue because in the person they're already kidney compromised from rhabdo, they think they have delayed muscle soreness, and so they reach for aspirin and they start down on a whole bunch of aspirin, Advil, etc., and they destroy their kidneys. And then they need a new kidney. I have spoken to nurses. This is never going to get written up in medical journals probably, but I've spoken to nurses who've told me of young athletic people who are now getting kidney, who are on a waiting list for a new kidney, and that's the reason why. They had rhabdo, they overdosed on the NSAIDs, their kidneys failed, and now they're on a waiting list.
How sad.
Horrific. I know, it's horrific.
You know, as a non sequitur, but tangential at the same time,
yeah.
The human race pushes the envelope in every area that we occupy, and we, what the end point is that we push to is complete extinction. Like once we start killing ourselves, then we back up a little bit. No matter what it is, and this is another example because what started out as a way to help people age better and improve health span and lifespan is now going to the point where it's actually shortening lives and hurting people because here we are again pushing it to the end point of extinction.
Yeah, yeah. Anything taken to an extreme condition can be detrimental to our health, if not our lives. So you're absolutely correct. And that's just something psychological about us. We, as you like to say, you know, we take things to extreme. I mean, you got people jumping out of spaceships and parachuting to Earth now, which is just totally crazy.
Right.
That's just something that some people are hardwired for that, and I don't understand it. But again, sometimes you know, looking back, we talk on the phone. You've had your injuries, I've had my injuries, and so you know, we like to think we're bulletproof, but you know, we're really not.
Right.
So
right. We are trying to prove to ourselves that we have infinite life available to do all the right things. I want to cover one other topic before we take this break.
Yeah.
So clearly, one would think the highest population that would have the biggest occurrence of rhabdomyolysis would be bodybuilders. These are guys and gals who literally go in. I mean, when you look at some, even back in the day, guys like Tom Platz, you know, Michael Hearn does his birthday squats with 405. I think he just turned 45 or 47. He did 47 squats with
incredible.
405. And I'm like, Mike, how much, like, what are you really going to do 50 when you turn 50? Are you going to lighten up the weight a little bit? But so these are the people that we should see in the hospital all the time. Now, I'm just giving Michael Hearn as an example of somebody who pushes their body.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. But when it comes to pro bodybuilders, we also know that pro bodybuilders use a lot of different drugs in order to build the kind of mass and ripped physiques that they do. Is it possible that we are misguided, that these drugs are not bad but actually good if you're somebody who's going to push yourself like that? There's a lot of speculation that Rick Froning was using drugs back in the day, and he's like a super CrossFitter. He's like Superman CrossFit, and he never had any of these problems.
Yeah, you ask a really big question. I don't know if there's any evidence in either way. It's possible some medications, some drugs, legal, non-legal, may reduce the risk of rhabdo, but they may also increase the risk of other things, you know, cancer, for instance, if you're looking at like steroids or whatever. But I can't speak to that either way because I've not seen any research on bodybuilders. I would have loved to have seen a 20-year study of bodybuilders and the incidence of rhabdo. we're probably never, ever going to see that investigation, unfortunately. Most of what we know about rhabdo comes from people who were wise enough to go into the hospital and get checked out by a doctor, and the doctors then writing it up and getting it published in a peer-reviewed journal or something like that, along those lines. I don't know. It's possible. It's hard to say either way.
So let's do this. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to start to connect the dots of at least maybe we can come up with a blueprint for some of the things that may or may not be implicated in the occurrence of rhabdo. How's that sound?
Outstanding.
Plug your website real quick. It's on the screen, but plug it anyway.
Yeah, so I've got two websites. I've got my personal website, which is joe-cannon.com, and that's where I write mostly about rhabdo. I actually interview people who have rhabdo as well, because I like to get their opinions. And then my other website is supplementclarity.com. That's where I write about dietary supplements. I do big reviews on what works, what doesn't work, side effects, etc.
And you've been doing that. The Supplement Clarity, it's an old website, right?
Yeah, it's actually a fairly new website, but that's a story for another day. But okay. I've been investigating supplements since the 90s.
Yeah.
So I've been writing about supplements since the 90s. I've written a book on supplements, which needs to be updated. But supplements are usually what I spend most of my time investigating. So these days, supplements and rhabdo.
And we're going to talk about that when we come back. We're going to talk about supplements and rhabdo when we come back. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more.
Dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating. But you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Imagine how successful your life would be if you could double your focus, double your mental energy, double your problem solving, your creativity, your willpower. Sounds too good to be true, right? That's what I thought until someone handed me a bottle of Qualia Focus. Qualia Focus is a mental performance formula that combines 24 of the most powerful molecules on earth to noticeably boost your brain power within just a few days of taking it, or your money back. Qualia Focus blows coffee away, but a serving actually has less caffeine than a cup of coffee. That's because it boosts brain power the healthy way. Just go to neurohacker.com. That's neurohacker.com and enter coupon code SHR at checkout for an extra 15% off. And a serving of Qualia Focus costs one-fifth of that coffee you're drinking right now. Unlike coffee, Qualia Focus nourishes your brain in a comprehensive, healthy way for amazing brain power you noticed in just a couple days. That's neurohacker.com to try Qualia Focus and discount code SHR at checkout for an extra 15% off. All backed by a 100-day money-back guarantee. Qualia Focus is a life changer, I promise you. Try it now for amazing brain power at neurohacker.com.
Sleep is one of the most important factors in maintaining health and longevity. And in today's environment, with all the artificial light we're exposed to, there is nothing more important to use to protecting your sleep than blue blocking glasses. And there's only one blue blocking glasses that I will trust ever, and that's Blue Blocks. BLUBLOX. If you go to the website blueblocks.com and use the code SHR15, you'll save 15% off the single best blue blocking glasses in the world, because you can wear them comfortably and still function, watch TV, work on your computer, but it blocks all of the important blue and green light that has been responsible for shutting down melatonin production and causing people to sleep poorly. Don't waste another night of sleep without wearing Blue Blocks, BLUBLOX, tonight. Put them on at 7 p.m. and you'll be asleep by 9 p.m. and you'll get the best night's sleep you've ever had. If you've never used them before, you are missing out. BlueBlocks.com. Use the code SHR15 to save 15% off.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improves the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both Use and endorse CanSee Eye Drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee Eye Drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000, or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number 1.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. Let me bring my mic back. I was texting with my son. He, his radiator exploded. He's such a good kid. I love my son so much. You know, it's really funny. I think about my son all the time. And he lives out in San Diego. He works so hard. And he said his radiator exploded and the Volvo dealership wants $1,100. I said, see, kids don't know about salvage yards, Joe. You and I know about salvage yards, right?
Absolutely.
There's a lot of things that don't get a lot of wear and tear on a car, and the dealership wants to charge you $10,000 something. You go to a salvage yard with a wrench, you pull it yourself, it's $60, and then you give it to the guy, say, here, put it in. How much is that? Oh, it's $150 to put it in. And instead of, and you dodge an $1,100 bullet. So I was just as succinctly as possible trying to teach him about what a salvage yard was. So
it was the time I was on a first name basis with every junkyard dealer in Philadelphia.
Yeah, there's no shame in picking up a used part that's perfectly good. You know,
I agree.
It's basically like a refurbished. I'm sorry I can't read all this so clearly. Aiden Ray says football players as well, and you did say that, especially during the preseason two-a-days. Yes. And which leads me to let's see this here. Hey Joe Cannon, this is fantastic. Always great to hear you speaking about this important topic. Yes, it is.
That's Alexis. I know her. Hey, Alexis, how you doing? I would point out that Alexis has had rhabdo several times, she's a very fit person.
This is really good. Alexis, thank you for helping me with a segue, because my eye is killing me, and I can't think straight right now. So does having rhabdo once appear to promote the reoccurrence?
Statistically, there is a greater risk in some individuals of getting rhabdo again. It does appear to be the case. I think you could also make the argument that once you had rhabdo, you may be scared to death to ever push the envelope again, and so you may be lesser likely to get it. But there does appear to be some genetics to rhabdo. The most common genetic abnormality that people bring about, talk about these days, is the sickle cell anemia trait. You're heterozygous for sickle cell anemia. You have one gene, not two genes. So you'll never get sickle cell itself, but you appear to have a greater incidence of rhabdo when you have that one gene. So some colleges may actually even do genetic testing on their athletes for sickle cell. So there's probably some other phenomenons out there, some genetic issues that may increase someone's risk.
What about thalassemia and Cooley's anemia? A lot of us Italians, we get that. That's similar to sickle cell, I've heard.
You know, I've not seen anything on it. It's possible. Again, I think we put a lot of emphasis on sickle cell, but there's other things out there that could increase the risk.
Yeah.
There is a deficiency, I believe, in an enzyme called phosphofructokinase, PFK, which can also increase the risk. There's other ones out there as well, McArdle syndrome. So, yeah, some people do have genetic predispositions to increase rhabdo.
And I've seen that in the literature. I've seen people who got rhabdo doing virtually nothing, and they actually had a genetic predisposition, which leads me to this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
When you do have rhabdo, one of the first things they do is they administer sodium bicarbonate intravenously.
Yeah.
And this protects the kidneys and seems to also help the kidneys process the myoglobin and the creatinine and get it out of the body. So can we say that maybe people should be using sodium bicarbonate if they're training excessively?
So when it comes to exercise, a lot of people jump on the sodium bicarbonate bandwagon to reduce lactic acid levels during exercise, much the same way as some people may be gravitating towards beta-alanine supplements for the same thing. There's some evidence that sodium bicarbonate is going to help the kidneys, no doubt about it. I was telling the story about my buddy's brother who is going into kidney failure, and his doctor recommended he take a little bit of sodium bicarbonate every day to help keep his kidneys going.
There's so much good research that shows that just 600 milligrams of sodium bicarbonate 2 to 3 times a day can halt the progression of kidney disease.
I have also seen some evidence that in really bad kidney problems, it doesn't seem to work as well. So, you can tell people to, take some sodium bicarbonate. I would say don't do too much of it because, it's going to give you diarrhea, especially if you're not used to it, because, it can have that effect. Give you some GI problems as well. I think generally you can make an argument for eating a more alkaline-based diet, more fruits, more vegetables, less hardcore, animal protein, because that you're going to get a lot of nutrients, not just, alkalinizing things, but, more potassium, which a lot of people are deficient in.
Yes.
That is huge.
And Kim Marie Ranieri, I actually asked him that question off the air. We will get to this about iron overload in a moment. But I know people who thought they had rhabdo who were actually hypokalemic. They had excessively low levels of potassium. They became disoriented. Their urine changed color, but there was no signs of high creatine kinase levels. And so what do you think about that?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's possible for different syndromes to have crisscrossing, outcomes. People, they think it's this, but it's really something else. And that's why I always say it's always a good idea to go checked out by some doctor who can run all the tests they need to do, so they can rule out, is it this, is it that? Because we tend to, again, we look on just, we look at just kidney function. It could be a lot of things can affect kidney function. May not just be rhabdo. Under hydration, over hydration. A lot of things can affect. Again, NSAIDs can affect kidney function as well. So, again, our bodies are complicated. As I sometimes say to people, we have about 100,000 miles of blood vessels in our body. We've got 20,000 genes. DNA stretched out.
Nothing is just one thing. Nothing is just one thing. I know. You know what? 14 years ago when I first started doing this show, I was sure that this was the cause of that and that was the cause of that. And after doing almost 3,000 interviews now, I realize that nothing is just one thing. So give up on that silver bullet idea. That's just not it. I want to put up Alexis Fesco's comment here because this leads into something else you and I talked about. She says, I do have a genetic disorder and predisposition that increases my risk. I don't take supplements. However, I have to drink a gallon of water a day because I have severe kidney damage and interstitial cystitis. Nutrition is important, imperative for me as well. So I want to raise a couple points here. Number one, I had a nephrologist on this show last year to understand when are the kidneys working the hardest. And here's what I came away with. And this is completely the opposite of what we're being told, right? So we're being told, if you have kidney problems, you have to reduce your sodium intake, you have to reduce your potassium intake, you have to reduce your magnesium intake to give the kidneys less work to do. When exactly the opposite is true, the kidneys work harder when they're trying to blockade minerals to keep in the blood and let water out. When you are getting adequate amounts of sodium, potassium, magnesium, phosphorus, different types of bicarbonates in your diet, then your kidneys actually, like a wastegate, they just open up. They're like, we don't have to worry about catching that molecule and catching that molecule. We just let everything go because we got so much behind us. So first of all, this idea that in order to preserve your kidneys, you shouldn't take magnesium and potassium, that's really actually causing more problems. And we see this to go back to the study that we talked about a second ago. So the sodium bicarbonate in progressive kidney disease actually worked just as well as sodium chloride, which is table salt. Which makes you think, well, maybe it's the sodium because everybody's on a low sodium diet today. So let's leave that there for a second.
Yeah.
Minerals are osmotically attracted to water. That's why when you take too much sodium bicarbonate, you end up with the diarrhea, because all the water moves into the intestines to get with it, because it actually pulls water to it. So if you're drinking a gallon of water a day and it doesn't have minerals in it, and trust me, just because it says Deer Park spring water, you may think it has minerals, but I found out the hard way that they get all the minerals out. So it's actually leaching minerals out of your body. You may have to supplement with minerals if you're drinking a gallon of water a day. You think that's a reckless idea?
So you're right. I'm always skeptical of the bottled water, because I've not seen any good proof that's any more anything more than just tap water. And so I like getting the minerals where I can from, you know, fruits and veggies. I usually start my day with it. People make fun of me. I throw lima beans in my smoothies in the morning. I'm it says it's me, but I can choke down anything if I cover it in chocolate protein powder. I'll throw spinach in there, pumpkin seeds. So I like to get the minerals that way. But, you know, the minerals are important because, you know, the more sexy name for minerals are electrolytes. And we are, at the end of the day, electrically driven beings. It is the electrical signals that keep our muscles working, keep our heart working, keep our brain working, keep everything working. And so if we're diluting our body, you know, and not getting enough, let's say we're on a low sodium diet, for instance, we're not, and again, maybe we're not getting enough for whatever reason. If we are diluting the body, we are potentially increasing our risk of even another phenomenon called hyponatremia, which is water intoxication. And that actually brings us back to rhabdo, because one of the online recipes that I see over and over again for rhabdo is you got to drink a lot of water. And they say, and I see it constantly, and it just bugs me, because they're looking at the bottom left-hand corner of the big picture. When people say, if you got rhabdo, drink a lot of water, they're only thinking about keeping the kidneys flushed. They're not thinking about the liver problems, the heart problems, any other issues. So here's my issue with drinking lots of water, just sitting by your side, biting the bullet and drinking water. You could drink so much water, you could go into hyponatremia, which can be just as serious.
Well, don't you remember those shock jocks in California? They were giving away a PlayStation, and they had to drink a gallon of water. And the woman came in, she drank a gallon of water so fast, and she walked out in the hall. She was so excited, and she had a heart attack. Her heart just stopped. She had hypernatremia. And so that's another really important thing. And Alexis, follow me, because I'm going to be introducing, I know this sounds like a complete pimp job, but it isn't. I'm going to be introducing a really cool mineral blend that's designed around the 600-year-old spring that we discovered in Ireland when we were there last year. And this stuff is amazing. But anyway, she says, minerals, I do take in, but major supplements, lots and lots of fruits, veggies. Good. So she's getting it covered. So the other thing I wanted to bring in to this discussion is something that I fell in love with in 2010, and I've been banging this drum ever since. And Kim Marie Ranieri knows it, and that is iron overload. I predict that most people in the United States today, because of fortification with things like vitamin C and real vitamin A, and the abundance of iron in everything today, are actually absorbing. I made a statement in 2010 when I did the show with Dr. Michael Smith from Life Extension Foundation, that there's a good chance that the iron you absorbed from a hamburger that you ate when you were 12 years old is still in your body. And I stand by that. The body does not rid itself of iron easily. And we have a perfect storm today for iron accumulation. And iron is, it destroys the cell. It's like, imagine a shard of iron, a shard of rust in every single cell in your body. It increases insulin resistance. It increases blood pressure. It increases demyelination of the nervous system. It causes all sorts of havoc in the body. I wonder if there's a link between people who have high iron levels and the occurrence of rhabdomyolysis.
It's possible. It is definitely possible. And again, not seeing anything definitive on it. If people with high iron levels or hemochromatosis have a greater incidence of rhabdo overall, I couldn't speak to that either way. I would agree that high iron levels, especially in us men, is not a good thing. It actually, you know, the analogy that I always remember from years ago was it acts like gunpowder in our body. It just can go off.
Yeah.
And hemochromatosis is a serious issue. It is, I believe, the number one genetic abnormality in America, affects approximately 2% of the population. I have an aunt who unfortunately died many years ago from hemochromatosis. Her organs died, and that's something that can happen. And I remember years ago, we were talking about vitamin C a little while ago. Vitamin C will increase our absorption of iron dramatically. I remember many years ago getting a blood test, and the doctor is saying, "Joe, you're high levels of iron. You're high normal." And I remember thinking, "Why am I high normal?" And I remember I was taking, I don't know, 500 or 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C back then. I got off the vitamin C, came back a month or two later, got the blood test. My iron levels dropped right back
but
down.
But Joe, here's the problem. Here's the problem with that. That statement is accurate, but it's wrong in this sense. So doctors look at ferritin for the presence of iron, because ferritin is a protein. It's a chaperone protein that's designed to carry iron until it gets into tissue, then it releases it. Ferritin levels will spontaneously rise in vitamin C without additional iron. So that's not a good indicator of iron. But unfortunately, that's what the medical orthodox uses. If they really wanted to know if your iron was high, they check ferritin. They check something called TIBC, which is actually the direct measurement of iron in your blood, and then they check a ceruloplasmin. And when they look at all three of those, they can go, "Oh, your ferritin is high, but your iron is not." And you go, "Yeah, I take a gram of vitamin C." And, "Oh, okay, keep doing it. Don't worry about it." So the reality is, you may not have had high iron at that time. You just had high ferritin, because the fact that it just went down that fast tells me it wasn't iron.
Yeah, we'll never know. It was many, many years ago. And I never gave any thought to it until when my aunt had passed away. And then I wondered, you know, do I have a predilection to hemochromatosis? I don't know. I've never gotten tests for it. But I don't take vitamin C supplements per se. I get them from food, or if it's a multivitamin or something like that, I'll get it that way. But normally, you know, my day, I'll throw an orange, lemon, you know, whatever in there with some, you know, spinach and whatever. And I'll get the vitamin C that way. So it should be, it's always in the back of my mind.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So when you look from the 30,000 foot view at what you've learned over the past decade, Are there any things you can say with any kind of gravity that, you know, these things seem to show up all the time when someone has rhabdo, the exercise-induced rhabdo?
Yeah, absolutely. 9 out of 10 times is my experience that people get rhabdo when they do something that they have never done before or have not done in a long time. For instance, you take 6 months off, you go back to the gym 6 months later, and you go back to your original training regimen of whatever it is, you know, 10 sets of arms or whatever, you know, and that's not what you should do. So again, you take 3 or 6 months off, you're kind of close to a beginner again. So you should start off slowly. Rhabdo occurs when you do a lot of stuff you're not used to. So and again, many times it occurs during, say, their very first training session. Unfortunately, I hate to say this, with a personal trainer. And again, I did a video a while ago on my reasons why I think rhabdo is increasing in fitness centers. And number one is lack of education. With the exception of me and maybe a couple other people, nobody's really talking about rhabdo in the fitness world. Alexis knows, she's been in my class. Every class I teach, I work rhabdo into the conversation and I try to beat it to death. But not many people are doing that. So lack of education is the biggest reason why rhabdo is occurring in fitness centers. But also, and again, one of the dirty little secrets, and I like to call it out because no one else is, one of the dirty little secrets in fitness centers these days is you join a gym, they want to get you on the, as I call it, the personal trainer crack pipe.
Right.
You are a much more valuable member if you're coming back month after month after month paying for personal training. So what sometimes the managers of these gyms do is they tell the personal trainer, when you get a new client, beat the crap out of them. Make them as sore as you possibly can on purpose so they'll think they're out of shape and they're more likely to hire a personal trainer.
Oh, that's a horrible thing to do, really.
And I have been told multiple times over the years, this is what's going on in some fitness centers. Not all of them, but some of them it is. And again, you've got a manager who don't know about rhabdo. You got a trainer who don't know about rhabdo. And then you combine it with the fact that the average personal training session in a gym is only 30 minutes long. You squeeze as much intensity into a 30-minute period as you possibly can. That's when you're going to get rhabdo. Rhabdo occurs when you do a lot of stuff you're not used to doing. It happens very quickly. So when I teach personal trainers, especially the novice who've never done this before, I usually come out and I say, listen, the average person who hires a personal trainer is going to be a woman over 40 who's a beginner. She don't know the difference between a barbell and a dumbbell. There should be, because of that, there should be no arm day, no leg day, no chest and back day in right. beginners. It's too much intensity focused on one muscle or a couple muscle groups. So that's another reason why I think rhabdo is occurring. So in fitness centers, but that's something that has popped up over the last several years that, you know, it surprised me when I first heard about it, because nowhere have I ever worked where people told me make them sore on purpose. But
that's horrible. Alan Cosgrove and I did a show about 10 years ago. And we called it When Personal Trainers Attack. Like, you know, when animals attack on the Discovery. Because I know more people that were hurt by their personal trainers. I've heard horrible stories about torn labrums and dislocated shoulders. And, you know, because the personal trainer is just pushing them to do stuff that they shouldn't be doing. It's just crazy stuff.
I agree. And they think because they like to work out that they would make a good personal trainer. There's more to personal training than knowing how to squat or doing or working out or whatever. You got to know anatomy, physiology, exercise science, program design, et cetera. And some of them don't even know. I got an email from a guy last year in Florida, again, got rhabdo. Spent a week in the hospital because of it, and he says to me, he says, I later found out everybody in the gym who was a personal trainer was just a buff guy wearing polo shirts. None of them were certified, apparently, he's telling me. Again, at your more well-known places, everybody's going to have some certification. That's great, but at some places, they may not have anything, which is crazy. But certification or not, odds are they don't know about rhabdo. So when people come to me and they say, well, I got a free personal training session at a gym. How do I pick a personal trainer? Well, number one, you could ask them, do they know about rhabdo? Odds are they don't.
If they say no, walk away and go find some. Just yell, hey, anybody here know about rhabdo? Yeah, I want to work with that guy. We're going to take our last commercial break. When we come back, we have some more questions. Another one from Alexis about MTHFR, which is all popular now.
Hormone
optimal. Oh, what did I do? Oh, I'm sorry. I hit the wrong button. I'm telling you, this one eye thing is really starting to get boring. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Men and women, you've heard about hormone optimization. Do you feel like it's something you want to look into? RenewLifeRx.com is the place to start. Their doctors can help you with the solutions. RenewLifeRx.com has a simple process for lab work, consultation, and taking a deep dive into where your hormone levels can be improved. Superhuman Radio listeners get 30% off your initial lab work and consultation. Go to RenewLifeRx.com to schedule your no-obligation phone consultation today. Feel younger, get in better shape, and be more productive. Productive at RenewLifeRx.com.
Are you looking for a better way to absorb the nutrients you know you need? Do what I do and start your day with lipospheric supplements from Livon Labs. Unlike pills and powders, Livon's patented liposomal encapsulation technology transports nutrients like vitamin C, vitamin B, glutathione, acetyl L-carnitine, and alpha lipoic acid to where they need to be, your cells. Visit try.liveonlabs.com/Carl to learn why I take these supplements every day to help me perform in the gym and in life. That's try.liveonlabs.com/Carl.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it. Did you know that the U.S. Department of Health actually patented cannabinoids as antioxidants and neuroprotectants? So, clearly there is promise for CBD to help with a variety of issues. H-Hemp's U.S.-grown CBD system is fully tested for purity and safety. For daily balance, H-Hemp has the best-tasting CBD tinctures available. Their Super Breath Blast delivers near-immediate relief and relaxation while on the go. And for your muscles, joints, and temples, the Magic Balm works wonders. Relax and feel better naturally with the H-Hemp CBD system from hemp.com.
There's a phenomenon today. So many of us sit for hours each day. Slowly, our bodies respond by shortening certain muscles. The psoas gets shorter and shorter over time. It leads to lower back problems, stiffness when standing, and inhibits your running performance. Now there's PsoRite.com. That's PSO-RITE.com. PsoRite.com. PsoRite is a device that allows you to stretch your psoas muscle and return them to normal function. And it does it better than any stretching movement or chiropractic adjustment can. You can use it in your home, office, or at the gym. Experience what thousands of people already know. Check out PsoRite.com and save 20% off when you use the code SHR.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. Get my graphics up. Okay. So Alexis asks a question about MTHFR, which is all the rage today. It's a methylation issue where people can't absorb their folate, and causes lots of problems. Any link to MTHFR or any of those types of methylation conditions?
You know, I just did during the break. I just jumped on Medline and tried to find some research on it. I didn't see anything particular. I saw some references to rhabdo and MTHR in the same article, but I didn't have time to actually delve into it too much. Again, it's involved in the absorption of folic acid. Folic acid is involved in the production of red blood cells. And we know that people with the sickle cell trait maybe have an elevated risk of rhabdo, and sickle cell trait involves the red blood cells. So it's possible there's a connection. It makes sense. So I take a step back at that 30,000-mile view. I haven't seen anything, and Alexis may have, if she may have seen it, something like this, but I haven't seen any data correlating MTHFR to the incidence of rhabdo, but that's actually a pretty interesting thought experiment. I'm not sure.
You know, I keep coming back to this. I'm really interested why we don't hear about bodybuilders getting rhabdo,
right.
Professional bodybuilders, because if anybody should be getting rhabdo, it's them.
I agree.
So, Alexis, this is a kind of a tangential, because we're talking about choosing personal trainers, but she says, ask your personal trainer who certified them. You know, you are with the NCSC, right? You're certified by NCSC and a couple other groups, is right?
I'm certified by NSCA.
NSCA. And you, those, so you actually have to sit for that test, right? You actually show up and sit for that test.
You do. It's I don't know if they've changed it since when I took it, but it was CSCS, the Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist, was a 4-hour 400 question test.
Yeah, there was a proctor in the room. You had a certain amount of time to do it. A lot of these groups now, they let you take the test at home. They don't know if you got a book open and how long you take to look something up.
Yeah, I think some of them actually have software you have to install on your computer to make sure you're not cheating and stuff like that.
That's nice.
But yeah, I think it's getting better. But you know, as Alexis pointed out, you know, you ask a personal trainer who they're certified by, and they throw the letters at you. You know, NSCA, CSCS, AFA, NASM, whatever. Those letters mean nothing to the general public. And so when people say to me, you know, and it sounds like Alexis the same way, when people say to me, you know, who are you certified by? Don't accept those letters. Ask them what the letters stand for. And if they can't tell you in 1 second, walk away.
That is really so interesting. NSCA, yeah, right? Because I don't know what they mean. I don't know what
they mean. And people go, and again, if the trainer only knows the letters, then that may mean the deficiency in other areas. I've gotten emails from people over the years. How dare you ask that question? How dare I not? You know, it's a good question to ask, because if you can't tell me what the organization's letters stand for, what else don't you know?
Yeah.
You know, so I get a little hardcore when it comes to that, because that's usually my. And it sounds like it's Lexus's also. It's our one question litmus test for personal trainers.
Anybody coming out with a urine?
Yeah.
Anyone coming out with a urine strip test? That maybe we could test for any of the metabolites that indicate rhabdo, because it's becoming so popular today. I see a real business opportunity here.
You know, it's a very interesting question you ask. I haven't seen any, but that may be something we should talk about.
Yeah, let's you and I do this. I know I have some epidemiologists that I work with that work in labs, and maybe there's a way to come out with a reagent that the strip is paved in and they urinate on it. If it turns blue, you're in trouble. If it's pink, you're okay, you know, something like that.
Yeah, kind of like a pregnancy test. I like that idea. I've never thought of it before you brought it up. But
Wait a minute. Alexis says that somebody beat us to it already. She says, I have a strip to pee on that will give me some info. I'd love, okay. Alexis, would you please reach out to Joe and let him know what it does show, what metabolites it does show? I'd love to know more about that.
Me too.
Here, Dr. Terry Hyman Patterson at Temple handled this. Interesting.
Okay.
Because this is something every gym should have right next to the defibrillator.
You'd think.
Somebody starts presenting, I'm dreary, my muscles are killing me. It's like, okay, come on, stand up, pee on this thing. Oh, my God, you're in rhabdo. Call the ambulance.
Yeah. And, you bring up another interesting point. Would the gym actually want to do that? Because then they might be opening themselves up to some legal action. And,
I know the personal trainer doesn't want you to know.
Yeah. A lot of gyms, I think, unfortunately, with many fitness centers, I can't say how many, but some of them, the less they know about you, the better, because then they can't be, do this or that.
Yeah, deniability. Oh, we didn't know you were dying. I know.
Yeah. I know. It's sad.
It is sad. So I want to wrap this up. The website is joe-cannon.com. You can go there and read more. You can get the book there, I guess. Can you get the book at Amazon as well?
You can get the book on Amazon. That's my book right there. It's Rhabdo. Just very easy to find on Amazon. You can get it from me directly on my website. I'll send it to you myself. But yeah, it's all over the place.
And it's sad to say, I was going to say, well, Joe, you got to update the cover. But no, I think nobody's heard of it yet anyway. It doesn't matter.
Right.
The fact that we saw like 10,000% increase in searches for the word when Dana Lynn Bailey posted on Instagram that she was in the hospital for rhabdo shows me that nobody knew what it was.
And if they think they know what it is, they're probably wrong, because they're looking at some of the so-called experts on the internet who are saying just drink a lot of water and jazz like that. I took all the science, I broke it down so anybody can understand it very easily, because I tend to write like I talk. It still is the scary side effect most people have never heard of. Or if they think they know about it, they probably don't.
Yeah, they don't know what it is. All right, listen, it's been great having you on the show. We'll have you back. We'll do some more fun things together, okay?
I look forward to it. You take care.
All right. Take care. You too. And then I was supposed to do Come At Me, Bro tomorrow, but I think I'm taking off. I know a lot of you like when I do Come At Me, Bro, because I answer your questions live on the air. But I'm going to take off tomorrow, let my eye heal, and I got a lot of things to catch up with in the studio. So we'll see you Monday with more Superhuman Radio. And, of course, as always, thank you for being here.